Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again on a crisp, rainy Thursday night on the East Coast. I am Jerry, JT by some people, a.k.a. the Master. And I'm glad you joined me today on the FSP Crew Show. We got a great show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you like to talk to me. Like I said, we got a great show in store for you tonight. We got witnesses. We got people calling each other out on teams. Ex-players calling quarterbacks out. We got off sports betting. We got colleges wanting to pay their student athletes. We got a lot to go through. Plus the fact is, I think we have one of many delusional head football coaches in the NFL that I'm going to talk about also. And like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. And if you want to talk to Jeff and me, that's how you do it. You have a chat room. For your convenience, you can always use that chat room. Jump in there, ask a question, make a comment or a statement, and we'll address it on air. But without further ado, you don't want to hear me talk all the time. You got to have a change of pace here. And my esteemed co-host is that change of pace, fellow Jersey guy, Double J, Jeff the Joker. What's up, my man?
Hey, Jerry, how you doing?
All right. We got plus people, and Jeff, we also have a very good matchup, hopefully. They have been sporadic. The last one or two have been pretty close and pretty nail-biting, especially near the end, talking about Thursday night football games. We got a matchup between the division rivals, the San Diego Chargers versus the Denver Broncos. Phillip Rivers, who's been super hot, and in my opinion, is an MVP candidate, and along with the other super hot and record-breaking, Peyton Manning in Denver, in Mile High, both 5-1 teams. This is a big game for both of these two teams and quarterbacks. Jeff, what do you think about Peyton and Phillip? Are you pretty excited to watch this matchup, and not just in fantasy-wise, but in reality, too?
You know, I mean, I think it could be a good game tonight. I mean, the Chargers have a lot of talent. I like Rivers. I've always liked Rivers. He's like the Rodney Dangerfield of NFL quarterbacks. And no matter what he does, he always gets compared to Eli and his rings and Big Ben and his rings and Drew Brees and his ring. And, you know, Rivers has had some very good years in San Diego, and he always hasn't always had great guys to throw to. He doesn't miss games. I don't know. I like him. You know, I really do. Unfortunately, his career will be viewed as incomplete if he never wins the big one. But it also notable, this Sunday, Detroit and Atlanta are playing in London, and that game's going to be on 9:30 in the morning Eastern time. And believe me, that's not a coincidence. If they get good ratings, there's going to be more of those games. I would almost bet on it.
Yeah, I don't understand why that game is so early when the other, I think, one or two games was at a later time. I don't understand why. I don't know if it's a test to see what kind of audience they get or it's some scheduling problem.
I mean, they're probably saying it's because of the time difference in England. They don't care about that. They're curious what kind of ratings they're going to get that early in the morning. If they get good ratings, they'll do it again.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much of a matchup it's going to be. You got the Atlanta Falcons versus the who's playing Atlanta?
Detroit. Yeah.
One of the best defenses, if not the best defense right now in the NFL, against one of the worst teams to play, even though Atlanta's supposedly, in quotation marks, the home team, but they're playing on the pitch in London. So, and they're not a good pitch type of team. They play better on the turf. And Matt Ryan, for the last two or three games, has been getting absolutely murdered, sacked, and whatever else. So I don't know how much of a game it's going to be, but it's an NFL game, so people are going to watch it regardless of what time it is. But you may be right. They're going to look to see what kind of rating they get. And if they get the favorable ratings, you probably will write, like, again, that they'll probably do it again. So I think that's the last, that's the last game overseas, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, or is there another one?
Week 10, Dallas and Jacksonville are doing it in London.
Oh, that makes four this year. Am I right about that?
I think it's that they're straight. And I guess there was one last week or the week before. But, yeah, you know, the NFL really wants to make it happen in England.
Well, they had a couple weeks ago before Miami went on a bye and Oakland went on a bye. They had a matchup over there.
That's right.
I thought there was one before that. I thought there was one a game before Miami and Oakland. I could be mistaken. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, I think three is probably the most they've had. I don't think they've had the amount of three. I think they only had about at least one and maybe two last year. Three is quite a bit. And I guess they're looking to increase the exposure in the games over there to quite naturally. That's another avenue to of revenue. So wherever they can get the dollar, you know they're going to go and try to get it. All right, Jeff, let's get into the show here. And while we're talking, and before I was coming on there, I was trying to decide which way did I want to go first in this. Which way did I want to go on this show? Which one did I want to hit first? And you know, I think I'll go this way first because we're in the state of New Jersey, and the governor signed a bill in the last few days, within the last week, to allow legal sports gambling in the state of New Jersey, starting at a track that's very close to me right now, Monmouth Racetrack in Oceanport, New Jersey. Well, quite naturally, the four major U.S. pro sports and the NCAA filed Park from accepting sports wagers this Sunday. It was supposed to start this Sunday. Well, New Jersey filed defense of sports betting effort. I'm going to read you this article and tell me what to think about it. Claims that New Jersey's plan to allow legal sports gambling violates federal law are meritless. The state wrote in a court filing in response to efforts by four major U.S. pro sports leagues and the NCAA to stop gambling from beginning this weekend. The state filed a response late Wednesday to the league's request to a federal judge earlier this week for an injunction to prevent Monmouth Park Racetrack from accepting sports wagering this Sunday. The track is the only venue in the state that has said it will take bets under law signed by Governor Christie last Friday that allows sports betting at racetracks and casinos. And quite naturally, in their infinite power, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and the NCAA filed a reply later Thursday, and U.S. District Judge Michael Schiff will decide whether oral argument is necessary. It isn't known whether he will make a final decision. In its filing, the state reiterated its contention that the language in a federal appeals court ruling last year opened the door for New Jersey to roll back its prohibitions on sports gambling and legally allow it as long as it isn't regulated by the state, meaning if it's privatized, then it would be legal. The leagues contend that it will, in fact, be state-regulated because racetracks and casinos are heavily regulated by the state and that this constitutes state-authorized sports betting, which is prohibited by a 1992 federal law. Now, they may be state-regulated, but Monmouth Racetrack is not state-owned. It's privately owned. They also claim that they will suffer irreparable harm if sports gambling is allowed in New Jersey. And that's a joke. Come on. New Jersey charged the league with seeking to have the federal government interfere in state affairs. Plaintiffs claim that their multi-billion-dollar businesses will suffer irreparable damage from even short-term wagering at Monmouth Park when similar wagering has taken place throughout the state of Nevada for more than 50 years and to a much greater extent are unsubstantiated and cannot be credited, the brief states. Only Nevada currently offers single-game sports betting. Delaware and two other states are allowed to offer multi-game sports parlay pools. And let me get two more paragraphs in here, then I'll get to your comment. In its filing Thursday afternoon, the leagues at NCAA called New Jersey's reasoning indefensibly folly and claimed that allowing sports betting would violate New Jersey's own constitution and that federal courts have jurisdiction to intervene. They also cited a 2009 Federal Appeals Court's decision that rejected a similar sports betting attempt by the state of Delaware. Christie signed a sports wagering bill in early 2012, and the league sued later that year. The state's constitutional challenge to the 1992 federal law failed, but in September, Christie ordered authorities not to prosecute racetracks and casinos for accepting sports bets, and signed an amendment legislation reflecting that last week. Jeff, what is your thoughts? This is probably going to get resolved within the next week or two, definitely before the season's over, whether it's yay or nay on this sports betting at Monmouth Park. And it's probably, if this happens, other states are going to follow suit, so the NFL and all the other pro sports and the NCAA are trying to nip this in the bud. What's your thoughts?
I think New Jersey and other states have tried to do it before, but the major league sports and the NCAA, they always fight it. The thing is, some states like New Jersey love gambling because it's one of the few ways they can raise money without a tax. I actually follow racing a little bit, and all over the country, different types of gambling have been subsidizing the horse tracks because horse tracks are closing up all over America. Fortunately, in New Jersey, we still got Monmouth Park and the Big M in East Rutherford. And, you know, Monmouth Park is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. I prefer Trotters. They got thoroughbreds in Monmouth Park, but
right.
That's a beautiful place. And up till recently, they've been doing fairly well financially, and they're only open about half the year. But now a lot of the horse tracks in other states, they're called racinos, so they'll have, you know, slot machines and sometimes table games, you know, just to, you know, bring some more people in and make them a few bucks for the track so they don't have to close. Donald Trump didn't want that in New Jersey because he thought it would take away from the action in Atlantic City. I don't think the sports gambling is going to happen because I think every time they try it, it always gets shot down. So they New Jersey and the governor could keep trying, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, let me say this to you, Jeff, and I don't know if you want to respond to it or not. I think Donald Trump is full of it because both you and I know, and we live in the state of New Jersey, that they've had, I think, close to a half a dozen casinos closing up over the last 2 or 3 months. Another one is due to close up by the time in November at Osmo Hall. And right now, New Jersey doesn't have any sports betting and doesn't have any slot machines in any other part of the state, only in Atlantic City. And he's saying that would hurt Atlantic City. Well, hello, Donald. It hasn't hurt Atlantic City. In fact, Atlantic City has hurt itself. This probably would help Atlantic City generate more income from a different venue. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, if they had the sports gambling in AC, that could create a little more action. I mean, a lot of things hurt AC, the economy, and then all these, Indian reservation gambling popping up all over. And then now they got in the Poconos, there's three casinos in the Poconos. All of that stuff cut into the Atlantic City action. So, they just had two big casinos close, and you think that would, you know, keep the other ones afloat, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, those casinos down there are sucking wind. It looks like it doesn't make a difference who owns them, who takes them over, or are they just going to be a big shell of a building and just sit there for years to come before somebody has another bright idea to open up that building as a casino and go through the whole process again of what they've been going through now is they become Chapter 11 and they sell off their assets and close because it's been these casinos, not some of the newer ones. Fearless casinos have gone through a few owners, and no one has seemed to make it stand for a long period of time. I think the oldest, you know, which is surprising because I've been to that casino quite a few times, not recently, but back years I went there quite a few times. It's a Showboat. I think the Showboat was the oldest casino in Atlantic City. And that closed up in, this is October, I think that closed up either last month or in August. So, and if the Showboat, which is the longest one in Atlantic City, can close up, the other ones shouldn't have any problems of, I won't say shouldn't have any problems, are easy targets to be able to close up too because of the appeal. Anyway, let's move on to another type of pay system, which doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that this state is the first one that could possibly do this. I don't know if you've heard about this, Jeff, but this is another article. I found this on ProFootballTalk.com, that the University of Texas, the Texas Longhorns, could pay student athletes $10,000 a Article says everyone knew there was a new day dawning for collegiate athletics thanks to autonomy for Power 5 conferences and the Obama lawsuit and the like. Part of the change called for increased benefits for all student athletes and elite specifically including football players. Tuesday, this past Tuesday, Jeff, one university put a price tag on that change. At a Big 12 sports forum yesterday, Texas Athletic Director Steve Patterson revealed that his university will soon begin paying its student athletes in every sport, male and female. The university expects to spend $6 million annually on the endeavor, which works out to roughly $10,000 per athlete per year. The Dallas Morning News writes, the money will cover college expenses that aren't covered by a traditional full scholarship and give each player $5,000 in compensation for the university's use of his image. The latter is in connection to the O'Bannon suit. For those who don't know O'Bannon suit, it's roughly, I'll give you a brief synopsis. The suit was that the universities were being compensated and using getting paid by selling players' jerseys or whatever else represented players at the university, and the players weren't getting any compensation from that. So this is in response to that. While an athletic department like Texas, the most profitable in the country, I didn't know that, can merely reach into his couches to cover the added expense, there are others at the forum who intimated that cuts in sports could be one casualty of the payments. If we begin to remunerate the participants, that's going to break that model. And that was UT Women's Sports Athletic Director Chris Polonsky Ward. Jesus, these names. We're in for a period of dynamic change, said former basketball, Maryland basketball All-American and U.S. Representative Tom McMillan. I remember Tom. The system has to change. The money needs to be handled. Texas incidentally becomes a school to announce specific payments to student athletes. It had previously been thought that with the autonomy legislation, athletes would receive an additional $2,000 to $5,000 to cover the true cost of attendance. Just when universities would begin paying five-figure sum is unclear. Jeff, $10,000 goes to these athletes, $5,000 in compensation for the university, versus use of his image. So basically, he's only getting $5,000. The other one's going to be going toward college expenses. Supposedly, in quotation marks, college expenses, and then he's supposed to get a clean $5,000. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, this is the first I've heard of it. I can't see it happening. It's just the conference, the other schools, the NCAA, and then what more will be expected in exchange for that $10,000? I mean, Texas is one of the huge universities, and I believe they have their own TV network. That might have something to do with it, but it's not that easy. You know, they can't. And I'm very curious to find print, because maybe you get the $10,000, but there's maybe less security. Not that there's much security if you have a traditional scholarship, but, you know, if you throw in that extra money and if guys aren't pulling their weight or whatever, I could see them getting dropped. I don't get it. I mean, there needs to be some reform, but this isn't what I think most people had in mind.
Okay. I understand, but this is something that most people thought was coming down the road, but I didn't think it was coming this quick. And we got a long lost caller on the line that we haven't heard from in weeks. And I welcome him on the show for definitely, because I want to get his take on this particular subject. I think we have talked about this before. So without further ado, let me welcome Mikal onto the show. Welcome, Mikal. How you doing, my man? Oh, I lost him. He was there, and I lost him. Okay. Anyway, hopefully he'll call back. This, in my opinion, came out of nowhere. But I guess the University of Texas wanted to be on ahead of the curve, so they decided to do this now before the football season ended. And let me see if I can bring Mikal back in here and get his opinion. Welcome, Mikal. How you doing, my man?
What's up, man? I don't know. We had some technical difficulties. How y'all doing?
Hey, Mikal.
Hey.
Okay, Mikal. I don't know if you were listening to what we were talking about for left. I read an article here, and I'm pretty sure you heard about this, that the University of Texas has decided to pay its athletes $10,000 a year. $5,000 will cover the college expenses, and $5,000 will be compensation for the university. Use of his image. What's your thoughts? I think that's a little low.
Yeah, that's a little low, but it's a start. You know what I'm saying? It's a start. They head in the right direction, but, that's a little low. I mean, 30 would be good. You know what I mean? It'd just be ballpark. Wouldn't be too low. Wouldn't be too high. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't be too bad. And, you know, I really wouldn't feel bad if they gave the $10,000 and they just covered all their complete health insurance. That would be something. I mean, that would really show that they know what they're doing. But they gonna hold them purse strings as hard and as long as they can. They'd rather pay the lawyers than take care of them kids.
All right, let's move on because this is another one. That, and I don't know if you or Jeff heard about this one, but this is, it's a shocker, but it's not a shocker. But the it's in college front again, one of the storied colleges, especially in basketball, down south in the great state of North Carolina, talking about the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I got an article here that says that more than 3,000 students at UNC received credit for state classes over an 18-year period as part of a program that allowed many of them to remain eligible to play sports during the week on Wednesday. Let me see now. The investigation by former federal prosecutor Kenneth Weinstein is the latest of several attempts to unravel allegations of academic fraud involving student athletes at a university known for both its academic rigor and athletics. Now, 18 years would cover part of or near the end of Dean Smith's reign there, but just part of it. The irregular classes at UNC from 1993 to 2011 had no class attendance or faculty involvement, according to Weinstein's independent investigation. The report does not incriminate any coaches or athletic administrators in the scheme, which was carried out by a former department head and former office administrator with an African Studies department. Athletes accounted for nearly half of the enrollment in irregular classes. Among the non-athletes, many were struggling students who were referred through academic support services. The told me, it doesn't go in this article, but what I read in some other articles, that in order to get a passing grade or an A and B, some of these classes, all you had to do was walk in and walk out. Didn't have to stay in the class, and had to write a term paper, one term paper, and you were guaranteed an A or a B, regardless of the content and the quality of the term paper. You were guaranteed an A or a B. And this is a story college. This is one of these colleges that nobody would have thought this took place, and this took place over almost a 20-year period. I'm going to go to Macau first on your thoughts, and then Jeff. Macau.
I'm not surprised, but it's like I'm like, I don't know how to explain. It's like I'm not surprised, but I am surprised at the same time. I know that don't make no damn sense, but it's like I know that type of stuff is going on, but I didn't think that stuff was going on in North Carolina. You know, I thought they had them boys. I don't know, because you know, listening to some of them dudes talking that came out of there, I don't know, man. I'm kind of surprised. You got a lot of feedback, man. I'm a press mute.
All right, Jeff, what do you thought?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little surprised. But then again, I'm not. But, you know, sometimes when these stories break, then it turns out they aren't quite accurate. But people remember the accusations. They don't remember, you know, all the inaccuracies. I mean, it's possible. And, I mean, you want to talk about historic programs, I mean, for college hoops, University of North Carolina has as much tradition as anybody. It's just accusations, and sometimes those can be very inaccurate. Remember, I think it was last year, the accusations against Oklahoma State football, and then it turns out a lot of the accusations weren't right. I don't know what was ever resolved, but, you know, I don't know. It might not be accurate.
Well, let me put it this way, and I say this for last because I wanted to put this out here. The investigator, which was Kenneth Weinstein, who was a former federal prosecutor, like I said, this is a quote from University of North Carolina chancellor. Okay, Mr. Weinstein has found that the wrongdoing at Carolina lasted much longer and affected more students than previously known. So they knew that there was a lot of things going. That is personnel at the who were aware of red flags, yet did not ask questions, the report said. The bad actions of a few and the inactions of others failed the university students, faculty, and alumni and undermined the institution as a whole. This conduct could and should have been stopped much earlier by individuals in positions of influence and oversight. Others could have sounded the alarm more forcefully. So, this did happen. It happened over a long period of time. The chancellor acknowledges that it happened and acknowledges that people turned a blind eye that knew about it when they could have said something long ago and stopped it in its tracks or made people aware of it. So this has got far-reaching effects. Not exactly how far it's going to go. But we'll have to wait and see how the NCAA is going to handle one of their storied institutions of the University of North Carolina. And this is nothing small. Oh, more than 3,000 students that attended over 18-year period. That's huge. And we'll see what happens going down the road and see how it's handled and what kind of a penalty North Carolina is going to get from all this. Let's move on to another place where it's a lot of turmoil. In the Windy City, there was a lot of wind after the Chicago Bears laid a huge egg against the Miami Dolphins in the locker room. One of their all-pro wide receivers by the name of Brandon Marshall blasted out and said that the type of play that was taking place on the field and the type of play that had been going on for the last few weeks, because Chicago's 3-4 and their play has been pretty bad, especially the quarterback play, is unacceptable. I mean, he repeated it at least two dozen times. The same thing, unacceptable. And he blasted his teammates, saying that a lot of things, that the door was open in the locker room and got out. And he doesn't regret, this is what his words said, "I don't regret anything that I said. It came from the heart. I meant what I said. The only regret I have is that the door was open and others heard other than my teammates." Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, if I had to point a finger in Chicago, it would be Cutler. I mean, he's got a great arm. He's a good quarterback, but he's got issues. And they gave him everything he wants. Now, who's he going to point the finger at? Because they paid him. They got a coach he likes, an offensive system he likes. He's got excellent wide receivers, yada, yada. Well, who's he going to point the finger at now?
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, because it's always something with him. So I want to hear what his excuse is now, because he's got everything he wants.
All right, what's your thoughts there, Mikal? Brandon Marshall sounding off, and even the press heard
really
what he said.
I really don't like Brandon Marshall, for real. But I don't have a problem with what he said, because he wasn't in front of a microphone and said it. You know what I mean? He didn't jump out in front of a bullhorn or microphone or call up some radio show and say all this stuff. He was saying it in the locker room. You know what I'm saying? Where the door supposed to be closed. And whoever the media person was that taped it, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. He set that person on fire with gasoline drones.
Okay. Well, one of Cutler's former teammates, I don't know if you guys heard about this, Brian Urlacher.
Yeah. That's what I thought you was going to talk about, but I heard that one.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring it up. I wanted to lay the foundation first before I brought this up. Former defender of Jay Cutler, especially that time that Jay Cutler got hurt, I think it was in the playoffs or an important game, and he got hurt and he couldn't go back in the game and he got lambasted. Brian Urlacher came to his defense. Well, how quickly have we turned since Brian Urlacher is no longer playing football and is a analyst or a TV commentator. He said that Jay Cutler is the highest paid quarterback this season, and says that the only thing elite about his form, that's the only thing elite about his teammate. On Tuesday, Bears general manager Phil Emery said in an online chat with Bears fans that he believed Cutler was elite because of his winning record as a starting quarterback, which is 59-52. On Wednesday, Urlacher disagreed, making his point in an interview with 87.7 FM, The Game in Chicago. This is a quote from Urlacher. "Financially, he's one of the elite guys in the NFL. He just hasn't produced like an elite quarterback. You look at the Bradys, the Mannings, the Rodgers, the Brees, those guys win every year. even with no one around them. Rodgers has no offensive line. He wins. Brady has no receivers. He wins. And you look at Jay, he's got Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Matt Forte, this great offensive line, Martell Bennett, and they can't seem to put it together for some reason. I'm not sure if that's his fault, but for some reason, they just can't figure it out. Macau, your thoughts on that?
Man, you know how quickly we all change our attitudes when we remove our blue shields or whatever shield, you know, whatever shield you work for, and you really come out and say something about somebody you used to work with. You really
right.
say something honest. You know, I thought what he said was spot on. I mean, he was right on. I mean, I like
right.
Cutler. I really do. I like Cutler. I like all the pieces they got around. I was down for them going ahead and giving them the money and whatnot. But he right. He got, and just like Jeff said, the Bama got everything he want. What's going to be the excuse now? You know what I'm saying? He got to produce, man. He got to sling that rock. He got to, and it ain't like he can't.
Jeff, your thoughts on Jay Cutler?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, you know, and Urlacher would know, and yeah, I think he's right on the money.
Okay. All right, let's move over to another guy that I don't know. This is the one that coach I said I think is one of these NFL coaches that is I think is. And it's not because it's my former team. It's just the fact that I think he's delusional by his comments. This is another article I'm reading from ProFootballTalk.com that Rex, would mean Rex Ryan, sees improvement from Geno Smith. He says he's improved since week 5 benching. Ryan told reporters today that while Smith's improvements might not be apparent on the outside, they're clear within the Jets. He thinks Smith is growing as a quarterback, and he's ready to have a big game Sunday against the Bills. A quote for him, I just think he's starting to see it. Whether the improvements are noticed by everyone or not, I've noticed the improvements that he's making. Again, I think the arrow's going up. Yeah, huge task in front of him this week, but I'm confident in him. If you just this is really pathetic here. If you just take the last 3 games, all right. Yeah, he's got 2 interceptions in those games, but one was like desperation against Denver, where we're just trying to get it out of the end zone, just throwing one up. We had a score, and so we threw a pick there. We threw one San Diego, the last play of a 2-minute, just a Hail Mary type situation. So that's it. So I think he's getting better protecting the football, and that's a big thing. I think his poise in the pocket's been better, and I think the fact that he was able to use his legs is another reason why I'm so confident in him. That's pathetic. I mean, he said he trusts Smith to keep improving and perhaps save his, well, not he didn't say that, but the article says it perhaps helped Ryan save his job, but I don't think that's going to happen. Jeff, what are your thoughts on that ridiculous thought process?
I don't know what I could add to that. Sorry.
What about you there, Macau?
I think he just tries to keep his job, man. You know, management wanted that Bama. He wanted that Bama Geno Smith in there. You know, so I think he just, you know, trying to cover his job. Because the dude's a bum. He's sorry, Slum. I don't see anything to build on with Youngin. Now, other than converting him to a wide receiver or something, I don't know. I don't like him.
All right. I'm going to get into this, and hopefully you guys have some opinion on this. I know Macau probably going to have an opinion on this. And I've gotten this same type of response from my my fellow brothers. And this is what I'm talking about. I'm going to the Northwest. I'm going to the Seahawks. Russell Wilson. Some of his teammates, and besides this, I want to talk about some other things that's going on with the Seahawks. Some of his teammates have said that they feel that, or supposedly it's been reported, that because of the way Russell Wilson is, that they don't think he's black enough. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Maybe because he doesn't talk a particular way. He talks maybe more proper English than the average black person. I don't know. But I've gotten that from people before too. So I don't know if you heard about this, Macau, but I want to get your opinion on that type of mind, that type of thinking from our people.
Right. You know what? That's nothing but hate. That's nothing but hate. Because I'm gonna tell you like this. There's only one other person that really could say something like this, but I know that this person didn't say it. You know, because if you look on that offense, there's only one other person that can talk talk with some smack, and that's Marshawn. Other than that, you know what I'm saying? What's my man's name? Damn, I forgot his name that fast. The quarterback I'm talking about.
Russell.
Other than Russell Wilson, the Seahawks got no offense. They got no offense. And you know, Percy, he really wasn't doing much anyway. So, with it not being, with me eliminating Marshawn, it's got to be one of those, you know, no-name dudes. You know, no disrespect. But they've been playing good, but Russell and Marshawn has been the offense, period. They've been keeping that team, that offense together, no doubt. So that's the only thing I can attribute it to, just straight hate. It's always somebody on the lower end hating, trying to get, you know, on the outside trying to get in. And unfortunately, Jerry, when it comes to us, that's how they try to play it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I can sit here and tell you right here, right now, I have absolutely no problem with Russell Wilson. No problem with him. I mean, the boy play. He say all the right things. He carry himself with dignity and honor and respect. And, you know, he talks proper. I like the youngin. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't know. Maybe y'all are saying, you know, I got a man crush on him. But that youngin is nice, man. He is nice.
Yes, he is.
I don't know what this hate is about. But I can only speculate that these Bammers is hating it because he is certainly deserving of this shine that he getting, man. For real.
Jeff, I don't know if people want to comment, but I'm
I heard some of this on the radio this afternoon, and I've liked Russell Wilson since he played in college at North Carolina State and also at Wisconsin. A very mature young man. And, you know, I think usually the type of person who would make that type of criticism isn't – as successful and maybe is jealous of him. Percy Harvin, was probably the kind of person to say that about him. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I never heard that Rob Gronkowski said Tom Brady isn't white enough. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the thing is when you're a quarterback, you know, big time pro athlete, you know, you can never make everyone happy. And I mean, some of the criticisms are founded, but some of them are ridiculous, you know. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago going into the first game of the season, Keyshawn Johnson noticed it was, I think, the most ever black quarterbacks starting the NFL season. And I think Russell Wilson and Kaepernick are mixed, and a lot of people have an issue with that. I don't know. I mean, you know, the thing is with Wilson, I mean, you know, he's an excellent player. He's a leader. He's mature. You know, I like the way he handles his business, but, you know, there's always going to be somebody who's jealous or not right or something. And, you know, he'll rise above it, you know, because, you know, he's that, you know, he's a quality human being. And it's odd. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, this year I really thought, and it's not out of the question, that the Seahawks had a chance to repeat because it's a young team. They lost a few guys, but not a lot. And I really thought they had an excellent chance to repeat. I mean, they're not out of it yet, but it's very hard to repeat, even if you got as much talent as they do.
Well, you guys know Percy Harvin got traded, and the team found out when they were boarding the bus, I guess, to go to St. Louis, I think the last opponent was, and Marshawn Lynch, who was a very close friend of Percy Harvin, went off and almost didn't get on the team bus because of the fact that his friend got traded. And this thing, I got some information, but I don't know how reliable it is. I think Jeff got the same text I did yesterday. One of the reasons why Percy Harvin was traded is partly because of why Russell Wilson is getting divorced. Is that one of the teammates, and I'm not going to name who it was, has supposedly had slept with Wilson's wife, and Harvin stepped up to this guy, and they had a fight, which was took place, because of the fact is he was trying to defend Wilson, and the guy code. And the guy code. Everybody knows the guy code. You don't mess with somebody else's woman, something like that. So Harvin, besides being the type of guy who had anger issues, who opted out of the game at a certain point last week, I think that was the final straw, who wasn't a complete wide receiver, and in order to put him into the offense, had to bring in gadget plays other than normal wide receiver patterns to get him into the game, to get him touches. They had enough of all that was taking place and his diva-type ways and passed him off to the Jets for a mid-round draft pick. Your thoughts? Percy Harvin going to Seattle. Percy Harvin going to the Jets. I'm sorry. McCown.
Bye. Let him go. Seriously, because the dude ain't do nothing, man. He wasn't doing nothing. I got a good look at them Seahawks when they play, when Russell Wilson and the Seahawks just thoroughly just pissed all over my Redskins. So I got a good look at that team, man. I was not impressed with Percy Harvin at all. I was like, where is this dude? Who is this dude? This is like a brand new dude, man. I don't know. I mean, and as far as all that other stuff, I don't know, man. They just be coming up with so much stuff on the internet, man. I just don't know whose story is what now. It's just real crazy. So I don't know if I can get too much validity to him going out with Russell Wilson's lady, you know.
Percy Harvin was defending Russell Wilson. He wasn't going out with him. He was defending. He was defending another guy. He was defending Russell Wilson because another guy on the team supposedly had slept with his wife and stepped to the guy saying he was wrong, you know.
Oh,
he, that's what
okay. Okay.
They got into a conflict about it.
Okay. I don't know, man.
You know, there's the big Seattle soap opera going on. I mean, as far as the Jets, maybe they should have thought about getting a receiver before the season began. And this Percy Harvin, I mean, big deal. He's a number three wide receiver, you know, good for a trick play once in a while and returning kicks and punts. I mean, he's like Ted Ginn, except with a bad attitude. Thing is, you know, guys like Terrell Owens and Ocho Cinco and Randy Moss, when they were in their prime, they were worth the distraction. Harvin is not a receiver like those guys were in their prime, so he's not. I don't think he's worth the distraction.
Right. Okay. Well, we got 3.5 minutes. I'm trying to think if there's another thing I want to cover here. Or if there's something that you guys want to bring up that I'm missing that has been news. I almost forgot about it. My God. Ray Rice. There's a strong sentiment that he'll be reinstated because he filed an appeal, and Commissioner Goodell is compelled to testify about his role, I guess, in the Ray Rice suspension or for the year versus two games, and there's a strong sentiment that Demaurus Smith, who is a lawyer, will be one of the guys questioning him. Your thoughts on Ray Rice coming, possibly being reinstated, and Commissioner Goodell having to give his version and step up the plate and give his version of why he did what he did. Talk to me, Jeff.
You know, I mean, even if Ray Rice gets reinstated, he doesn't have a team anymore. He got dropped by the Ravens, so I don't think anybody's going to want to re-sign him. I mean, we're already looking at week 8. I think if, Ray Rice stays out of trouble and whatever, I think someone will probably sign him for next year. But I it's hard for me to imagine him playing in the NFL this season.
Mikal, what are your thoughts about Ray Rice getting reinstated? Possibly. With a chance of getting reinstated.
Man, my son is an argumentative little soul, and he's 20 years old. He could get him reinstated. Seriously, any lawyer that can argue can win this case. So he's definitely getting reinstated, which brings me to Roger Goodell and the NFL. I have no idea or any understanding as to why they put him out of the league. I mean, you know, it's just stupid. You know, because once the Ravens caught him, all they had to do was blackball him. And for real, just like Jeff said, ain't nobody picking him up. Nobody's picking him up. So, I mean, that again goes back to Goodell. He keep doing dumb stuff, man. He keep doing dumb stuff. And the more he opened his mouth, you know what I mean? The more stuff get to fly into it, and it mess him all up, and it mess the league up. This dude cannot lead. He is not a leader. He is not a leader. He's terrible, horrible. I can't even believe that this dude was a lawyer. I can't believe that, man. And on top of that, you know, his mentor was Tagli Bue. I mean, he was right up under Tagli Bue. I don't understand.
Right.
I really don't understand. I mean, I understand, you know what I mean? Because I know what he was brought in for, and I know what all that rah-rah meant. And when I was trying to tell my, you know, my beautiful cousin that's what he was that's what he was here to do, you know, he was like, nah, and he was sweating. He was sweating. I was like, man, this dude is a clown. Now we get to see the circus that this clown is participating in. That's all I got to say, man. But, expect Ray Rice to be reinstated, but I don't see anybody picking him up. Not a running back. Not a 28, 29-year-old running back. Seriously?
Right.
I can get somebody with better legs and better knees out of, double A.
He's also filed something with the against the Ravens also, and that's so he can get the money he's owed for the rest of the season. So at least he can walk out and get the rest of the money that he's owed.
That was cruel.
So we come to the end of the show. I'm going to go and watch this nothing game. As far as I know, still nothing. I'm talking about the Denver versus San Diego Chargers. I'm going to hand it off to Mikal first, and then Jeff, and then I'll close it out. You guys got anything to say before we get out of here?
Yeah, I just want to say peace and blessings, and it looked like it's going to be a Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight. It looked like I'm going to have to eat my words, son. Look like these two about to get it on.
Okay.
Look like they about to get it on, man.
All right. Jeff?
It's about mid-season for the NFL. It's starting to get serious for NFL and for fantasy trade deadlines coming up. So, may the best teams win.
With that being said, I want to thank you guys for joining me tonight. People who are listening or who are listening on the archives, tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll be here again on the FSP Cruise Show. Jeff, myself, maybe Macau will drop in again. And maybe we'll get Victor or Mike to drop in also. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the rest of this night in this divisional game. Enjoy the games that are coming on this weekend and including on Monday night with the Dallas Cowboys against the McCall's Washington Redskins. And for that, we are out.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.